This show is a part of the FM Podcast Network. Visit us at fmpods.com.
When I was a kid growing up in Jersey, anybody who was a hoot or really funny or something, we'd call them a riot. Ladies and gents, this guy's a riot in more ways than one. Bob Dylan.
This is Pod Dylan, the show that celebrates the work of Bob Dylan, 10 songs at a time, part of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host of Freewheeling, Rob Kelly. And joining me this week are two of my bestest pals, Henry Bernstein and Matt Simonson. Hi, boys.
Hello.
Hey, Rob.
Thank you so much for coming back one last time. I deeply, deeply appreciate it.
The band of the hand had to reunite.
Had to get the band back together.
It's like right.
This is the last one.
Absolutely. So, well, okay. As you see from the show notes, this episode is called Bob-O-Rama. And what does that mean? Well, much like last week's show that featured Allison Rapp and Melissa Tomczak and Rebecca Slayman, where that was, I wanted to get as many opinions about as many different things about Bob Dylan's sort of life and career outside of his songs. I wanted to get as many opinions as I could in as we're wrapping up the show here. And so I wanted to do that again this week, except this episode with Matt and Henry will be exclusively talking about the songs. Of course, you know, even after 300 plus episodes of Pod Dylan, there were still some songs we never got around to doing. And so I thought it would be kind of fun to just go to do a quick kind of trip hammer through a bunch of songs that, you know, for one reason or the other, no inference on their quality or whatever, that we just never got around to doing. And I wanted to at least give them a little bit of attention here in the penultimate episode of Pod Dylan. Now, we decided to change it up a little bit and add even a little more variety. And I think, I don't know, I think this was Henry's idea. Maybe it was yours, Matt. I don't remember who added this wrinkle.
It was mine.
It was Henry. Okay. all due credit to Henry was that there's 10 songs we're going to be talking about. Four of them only Matt knows. Four of them only Henry knows. And then there are two more that neither one of them know.
Oh my God.
I made the list. And so that way we're going to throw, you know, we're just kind of going to be able to change it up a little bit, and that Henry obviously has had time to contemplate his four songs, and Matt has had his time to contemplate his four songs. And then I have two that nobody has had time to contemplate except myself. So, you know, some of these conversations will be probably pretty brief. Some might be a little bit longer, especially when Matt gets to like a Rolling Stone. That's going to be kind of exciting. I just thought it would be a fun way of, you know, again, giving some of these songs a chance to shine. So, boys, if you're ready, we will just get started.
Buckle up. Let's go.
Let's do it.
All right. So, and by the way, everybody, as I mentioned, none of these songs have been covered before. This is not anything where we're redoing some songs. These have never been talked about on the show, maybe glancingly, but they've never had an episode devoted to them. So, okay, Henry, we're going to start with you. The first song off your list is from 1970s Self Portrait, and that is Alberta Number 2.
Ooh.
Now, okay, maybe wondering why is it, first of all, there will be a couple of covers here. Why did I pick this one? Well, I'll tell you. When I was younger and I was getting into Bob, one of the things that really made me fall in love with his work was that not only was the songs that he wrote brilliant, was that I thought he was a master interpreter of other songs. And he was introducing me through his work to songs I had never heard of. I never heard of Alberta. Never heard of it. I never would have heard it if Bob Dylan had sang it. So, there's a couple versions of it on Self-Portrait, but Alberta Number 2, there's just something so simple about it and sweet that I've always loved. So that's why I picked it. So Henry, your thoughts on Alberta Number 2.
I was thrilled when I saw this at the top of the list. I've talked about this before here that, when sort of downloading all Bob Dylan in 2001, when I became a mega fan, I took it all in at once. Like, I didn't go with, like, the folk period. Then he turned electric. Then he went country. Then he made a quote-unquote bad cover album. Then da-da-da-da. I just took it all, like, as it came. And Self-Portrait was part of that. So, like, I've never... When I saw that quote years later... not even years later, but, you know, sometime later of, what is this shit about Self-Portrait? I couldn't believe it. yes, obviously parts of it are not great, but like any Dylan album, that's true. So Alberta in particular, number two, is definitely one of the highlights. I love its rich history in blues music, that going back to Leadbelly, who, by the way, also recorded several versions of it. Going back to Mary Wheeler in 1944, even Eric Clapton on Unplugged in New York, one of the most, or Unplugged album, one of the most famous albums of the 90s, right? He does his version of it, which is more like Alberta, Alberta, where you been so long, right? So just the rich history, Doc Watson did it, Odetta. Just Bob Dylan, even back in 1970, sort of putting his stamp on a song that has such rich history in folk and blues music. I just love it. And his voice is wonderful. It's great. And I agree with you, it's the better of the two. Of course, years later we got Alberta number three on another self-portrait, which I knew was coming. I knew he had that in his back pocket. So yeah, I also find it just a delightful part of a controversial album.
Absolutely. I mean, I love it when he just keeps things simple, you know, and like that when he sings, and it's in the third verse, Alberta, don't you treat me unkind. Oh, my heart is so sad because I want you so bad. It's just so simple, but so beautiful. And just the way he sings it, it's so, he's playing a sad person, but obviously 1970, he's probably at the apex of his happiness in terms of his relationship. And so there's just something so wonderfully sweet about it. So yeah, I don't know. I self-portrait is one of those things where I'm like, I could have, he could have just done a whole record of these. It would have been fine. I would have been perfectly fine with this. This is great. Let him sing these songs. So, okay, Matt, you've had all of a minute and a half to think about Alberta number two.
People can't see this, but Matt was feverishly typing while holding four
Feverishly,
different
yes.
books. Yeah.
All right.
The
So, yeah,
history of
Matt,
Alberta.
Alberta number two.
Well, I'm like Henry. I came into Bob Dylan when he had most of his albums already out, and I just randomly dove in. I think I've told you before, the first two albums after Greatest Hits that I got were Freewheelin' Bob Dylan and Good as I Can Be. And it was never this worry that, oh my God, he's stuck in this period, he's never coming out, because there was so much variety. And I didn't realize I wasn't supposed to like self-portrait, and I loved it. And there's so many good songs. And reading about it, then later he kind of backtracked and said, oh, this was a way to get the bootleggers off of my back. Make it a double album. If it's going to be a stinker, then load it up. He said all of those types of things. But I've thought about this, and I think he was being very forthright when he called it self-portrait. Because if you look at what's on this album, you say, oh, this is a hodgepodge of songs. There's some country blues, there's some pop music on it, there's some folk music, there's some murder ballads, there's other songs. And that's exactly what his influence was. So it really was a self-portrait. It was everything that he listened to. And he made some comments during the Tom Petty tours about some of those covers he was playing. And he said, growing up, Tom and I used to hear these songs on the radio. You can't hear them anymore. And that was before Spotify, that was before YouTube, which people in the new generation don't realize that if it weren't on the for the radio, you couldn't hear these songs. You didn't know about them. You'd have to go out and try to buy them, and they weren't all available. So for him to bring these back out, I think was just great. Specifically about Alberta, I love it too. The line about give you more gold than your apron can hold, I think is so sweet. Reminds me of, like Pretty Peggy O, and just, that old timey period, Rob, where gold was the currency, and the man about town who had gold coins clinking in his pocket were, signs of him being a suitable mate, all those kind of things. So I'm a big fan of this song as well, and nice to get a little background from Henry on all the people who covered it. I did know Leadbelly covered, but I didn't know about the others, including Doc Watson. So that's
Yeah,
great.
Leadbelly's probably the most he popularized it the most. He recorded four different versions of it. So yeah, I mean his was probably the most popularized. But yeah, I mean, The self-portrait, what you said, Matt, was so beautiful about self-portrait. I love that. And quite literally, the cover is, you know, that's Bob Dylan's art when you see it. At least now we do. Yeah, maybe not in 1970, but same style as Music in Big Pink cover, you know, whatever his style. But it's quite literally a self-portrait of his. And I love what you said. It's almost like it's like Good As I've Been to You or World Gone Wrong before before those albums even existed. Like this looking back, you know, not much time had passed if you're between 1963 and 1970, but less than a decade, but he's somehow looking back at what the songs he grew up on, much like he does much later with Good As I've Been to You and World Gone Wrong. So yeah, I really love that you said that it quite literally is a self-portrait.
I don't know, Matt, if the quote that you just had is like verbatim or you're just paraphrasing, but I like when he says that Bob is like, these are the songs me and Tom listen to. Like he's acting like him and Tom are brothers that grew up together at the same time. Like that's what I hear in my head when you say that. I'm like they're laying on the bed together. They're just like,
Listening to the radio, yeah.
listen,
Legs
yeah,
in the air,
okay.
yeah.
They got
Stop
their
it! Stop
recorder
touching
ready.
me! Stop it! Like that's what I feel like. Me and Tom, like, okay,
Well,
all right, yeah.
they're Wilbury brothers.
They are Wilbury
They
brothers, yes,
are.
obviously, yes. So I don't know. That quote just is very charming to me. If
Very
he's
sweet.
lumping Tom Petty in with him, that's just so cool. So, by the
True.
way, let's hope we haven't said everything we want to say about self-portrait because it might come up again.
Okay.
The
Wait, one more
next my
question,
next
Rob,
song is
because
Alberta One.
Alberta number one.
That just hit me now. Okay. Rob, one more question because you always have this stat. Has this ever been played live?
Not to my knowledge, no. It's not listed. So yeah, no. That's which is a shame. Again, I a concert of those, that'd be super fun,
Yeah, for
maybe
sure.
that lady that yelled plays something we know won't like it, but
He
I don't
goes
know.
into
Maybe they're
Alberta number two.
She's a big Alberta number two fan.
Hold it up a sign.
Exactly. So okay, all right, Matt. Your first song. We're getting the covers out of the way.
All
But we're
right.
jumping ahead in time with 1993's Delia from World Gone Wrong. What are your thoughts
Yes.
on this performance?
Well, first of all, beautiful performance. Bob acoustic guitar, murder ballad. Does it get any better than that? His voice is so pure and robust. Again, in this one, a little like what Henry was describing, it's been covered many, many, many times. I did a little digging, and obviously one of the most famous covers is Johnny Cash's cover of the version of Delia's Gone. But Blind Willie McTell covered this and was really one of the ones who popularized this version. So it sounds like there's a branch or a fork in the lineage of Delia where it kind of went the Bob Dylan Delia route and then it went the Delia's Gone route. With the main difference being apparently the point of view of the narrator. So in Bob's version, the point of view is somebody who's a friend of Delia, mourning the loss of their friend, not necessarily the killer themselves. So I think this is a great song. One of the interesting things, I went back and listened to the Blind Willie version, and the order of the verses is a little bit different. And then all of a sudden he sings the verse about the rubber-tired buggies, the rubber-tired hacks. They brought her to the cemetery, but there was no bringing her back. And I'm like, wait a minute. I've heard Bob sing that verse, but it's not in Delia. It's in Duncan and Brady.
Oh,
Um,
that's fine.
from Tell Signs, which just kind of shows it's the folk process, right? Like you beg, borrow, and steal from different songs. But you know, I mean, it's a traditional murder ballad. It's a story about Curtis. Sounds like Bob's saying Curdy in the song. Curtis shoots Cordelia down with a Colt 44 because she loved all those rounders more than she ever loved him. And then, you know, the narrator singing that all the friends he ever had are gone, which is just such a sad line. And then you think of Bob today. I mean, he seemed like an old man in 1993.
And unfortunately, that's 31 years ago. Fortunately, he's still around. But, he's at that
The
stage of
early
life.
songs of Bob Dylan.
The early songs, and some of us are, we're getting to that stage of life where we are starting to lose some friends, and that's a sentiment that, just comes pouring out of his delivery, that you feel it, that you feel this is a guy alone, looking back, really singing to nobody because everybody's gone. He's just singing to himself, lamenting the sad story and the loss of his friends. And it's amazingly heartbreaking, and you just can't get enough of it. I don't know what that says about us that we signed up for that kind of ache and heartbreak, but you keep feeding it to me. I could listen to this song all day long.
This song might have maybe not the biggest gap, but certainly one of the biggest gaps in terms of live performances, because he played it at the home of Karen Wallace, that one of the those home concerts he was doing on May 1st, 1960. And then he did not play it again until 1992. So you've got 32 years of a gap there between before. And it's funny to think about, he performed it twice in 1992, and that's a full year before World Gone Wrong comes out. So he obviously sort of
Oh,
had it on
wow.
his mind, and then he does it at the Supper Club, and then he did it in the 2000s a couple of times, and then a one-off in 2012. And that was it. So it's only been played 9 times. But yeah, it's amazing to think that it's a song he's playing in 1960, and then he returns to it 3 decades later. And like you were saying, Matt, I found this performance on the record to be really breathtaking. He's almost whispering it in some ways, which to me kind of makes it more powerful. And I will say that when I got the record in 93, I liked it. I liked the record a lot, but it really sank in just a couple of years later, because I had been hit with a broken heart, and my best friend at the time had basically also departed, had decided to basically leave, and we weren't really much friends anymore. And so that line about all the friends I ever had are gone really rattled around in my head. And it was just one of those things where I'm like, God, this guy is digging up old folk songs and he's presenting them in a format that I'm going to hear in 1995, and it's really resonating with me. And it was really quite powerful. And it's just an absolutely gorgeous performance. That's why I as good as I've been to you is, I think World Gone Wrong is a couple of multiples better as a record. And part of it is that performance. I just find it to be incredibly haunting. And like you were saying, good Lord, it's 30 years old at this point, and he's lost a lot of friends since, but I think it's absolutely beautiful. So, all right, Henry.
Well, first of all, it's hard to believe that 1960 to 1992 is only 30 years, 32 years. Like, it just that seems like those two different Bob Dylans is miles and miles apart. Personally, I go more towards "Good as I've Been to You" over "World Gone Wrong," probably just because I think I heard it first, and listened to it over and over again until the next CD from Columbia House came, which was "World Gone Wrong." This song is just it absolutely kills me. And Matt, what you said about just that stinging line at the end, and you too, Rob, about the way it's so personal. The story of the murder that he's sort of telling is you can kind of it sort of to me, I should speak for myself, it sort of washes over me, and feel like I'm not really paying attention to the words that he's singing, but more just the feeling they're evoking. And then when he gets to "All My Friends Are Ever Gone," it's like the song is about something else, and it does feel deeply personal, and that he's telling, it's not abstract about this crime that happened in the 1800s. It's about whatever he was feeling in that moment. I really truly feel that with the way he sings "All My Friends Are Ever Gone." You said he's almost whispering it. I mean, it's like it gets like really inside your ears if you're listening on good headphones. It's one of those, in Yiddish we call it in your kishkas. It's like in your gut where you feel something in your kishkas. Like it's this visceral feeling of the way he sings that. It's absolutely stunning song. I like both you said, I could listen to it over and over and over again, and I absolutely have listened to it over and over again. And then just like a couple things about you're sharing some of the history with it. I believe it's traditional, but it is based on like a real case that happened. A Delia Green was murdered.
Yeah, Delia Green.
Yeah. In 1990. And, so excuse me, in 1900. you know, this one also was covered by, like you said, not covered, is traditional, but every, like, by Blind Willie McTell, but also Dave Bromberg and Pete Seeger did Adelia's Gone and Harry Belafonte. Like, Bob's sort of the class above Bob during the folk era, like that sort of group, the people he looked up to, Kingston Trio, Burl Ives. But I read this really funny thing as I was just quickly Googling it, that the song Delia's Gone was such a staple of the folk revival of the 1960s that Steve Goodman from Chicago used the melody and chorus for his song about Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley, Daley's Gone, released it on his 1977 album Say It in Private, which is just, if you're from Chicago or you know Chicago, that's just such a funny thing. Like, Richard J. Daley, he was the mayor of Chicago for like 30 years or something, and, you know, basically created a lot of the segregation in the communities and the neighborhoods and things like that. So that's just amazing of Steve Goodman.
That's I love, but have you ever seen
oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, Henry, have you ever seen the movie 13 Days about the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Yes,
there's that scene where, you know, shit's starting to hit the fan and they're planning to go visit Kennedy, has to visit Daley, and they're like, well, we got to cancel on him. And Bobby Kennedy's like, I'm not canceling on Daley. And the president is like, I'm going to cancel on him. Watch this. And then they cut to him shaking Daley's hand. Yeah. It's like, that's how powerful Richard Daley was.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Even Kennedy cannot. That's a great scene. Like, even if you know nothing about Richard Daley, you're like, okay, right. I get it.
All well, right, now you get it. Yeah. So it's amazing that Steve Goodman wrote, did that song to that tune.
So, all right, Matt, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. I was going to say that there were 9 live performances of Delia. Mm-hmm. And then 3 of those are very important. So the first one you mentioned was Karen Wallace. And for those longtime listeners who don't know, the Karen Wallace tape is one of the first recordings that Bob made back in 1960. And it does not circulate in full quality. And so it's considered one of the holy grails of the Dylan bootlegger community. But there is a tape of the Karen Wallace recordings that exists. And so those of you who have heard it, it's referred to as the armpit tape.
Right.
And that's because she put the tape up for sale in the 70s, I think, for around $10,000. And somebody, a bootlegger from England, I believe, came over, hid a tape recorder in his armpit, and got to listen to a few of the songs. But one of the deals that she made was that if she was going to play snippets for him, he had to help her wash the dishes. So you can hear some of the songs, and then there's talking over it, and then there's some clanging of some dishes. So hopefully, I happen to know that the tape does exist. It is somewhat local to me. So I'm hoping someday that it will be shared with the archive and the Dylan office so that they can release it maybe on the Villager someday. So that's probably the most famous recording.
Wait, did someone actually buy it for $10,000 from her?
No, it's it didn't sell. So she sat on it. She's still alive.
Wow.
And I think the tape is in possession of her family. So hopefully someday that gets shared with the rest of us. The next famous performance was at the Supper Clubs in New York. So this is one of the covers that he played. Mm-hmm. And then the third and maybe most important was he played this on my 25th birthday.
Oh, no way. Were you there?
I was not there, unfortunately, but it was in Las Vegas. So I thought the penultimate version live was on my birthday. So I consider that the third most important date.
Absolutely.
I hope the next time they do one of those T-Bone Burnett $10,000 one-off recordings, and some rich dude buys one, and it's just the sound of the dishes being done. Like, they just sub in that audio. Like, here you go. Here's the the Wu-Tang Clan special release that only that pharmaceutical guy owns. Here you go. Here's the sound of them making washing dishes. So, it's just a beautiful performance, and it's something I've always wanted to get to. Again, we never got around to it. So, okay, Henry. Your next song was from 2009's Together Through Life, I Feel a Change Coming On. And I will admit, I picked this. I tried to be random, you know, mixing with songs that we haven't done, obviously, but also, you know, a little random. But I will admit, this has been on my mind mostly for the refrain, because this song is a guy who is, you know, he's singing the last part of the day, or the fourth part of the day is already gone. So with somebody a little older, and he is experiencing some drastic change in his life, and the sort of conflict that comes with that. And that is something I am experiencing right now. And so this song has been on my mind quite a bit lately.
I was so happy you picked it. I mean, this is just, I love Together Through Life. And I know you had a beautiful conversation with Roberta about Beyond Here Lies Nothing, which I also love. Mm-hmm. I love the way the accordion just is sort of a bed throughout this whole album. It just kind of gives a tone to this particular album. Love or hate the accordion. And I love the little intro in this, the da 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 da. It's just, I don't know. There's something about this song that feels familiar, that it's that I've heard. I remember when I saw the track listing, I was like, is that a cover of something? Like, is that Sam Cooke sort of, like, you know, Change Is Gonna Come, which, by the way, we know was inspired by Blowing in the Wind. So perhaps there's a connection there. They're referencing each other. And yeah, it's got a great chorus, you know, a Bob Dylan song where you can, you know, Don't Bore Us, Get to the Chorus. You can sing along to. And, you know, it's got these great literal references. I'm listening to, and music references. I'm listening to Billy Joe Shaver. I'm reading James Joyce.
Bob loves telling us what he's reading and listening to at any given point.
I love it.
He yeah. really should form a book club at this point. He really can get into that.
And I feel like at this period of time, there was like more of that. Like, you know, he had done the Alicia Keys reference in Thunder on the Mountain. And then this came 3 years later. I felt like it was sort of, that was something in modern times, so to speak, that he was telling us what he's reading or listening to. But, you know, and then he even says, some people, they tell me I've got the blood of the land in my voice. And to me, that was a reference to people commenting on his actual physical voice all throughout this is just how I interpreted it, all throughout his career, that, you know, that stupid, you know, bad imitation that we've all heard, mm-hmm. or even just people at that time criticizing his voice, you know, that it was, and it, because maybe it sounds like it's got blood and gravel in it sometimes. And that's what I just thought that was a reference to. And I always really just liked that line. And I read this great quote from Bob Dylan from the May 2009 edition of Rolling Stone magazine. He said, Waylon played me Shavers, Ain't No God in Mexico, and I don't know, it was quite good. Shaver and David Allen Coe became my favorite guys in that outlaw genre. The verse came out of nowhere. No, you know something? Subliminally, I can't say that it is actually true, but I think it was more of a Celtic thing, tying Billy Joe with James Joyce. I think subliminally or astrologically, those two names just wanted to be combined. And that quote to me, I read that, I was like, that's bullshit. Like, he's just...
Oh, come on.
He's doing...
It's just like Anne Frank, like Indiana Jones, and then British Bad Boys, the Rolling Stone.
I just think, like, maybe some of that stuff, maybe what he's saying is true, but I think he's also just saying stuff to the Rolling Stone reporter, like that's just, it's like Bob Dylan speak, you know, it just, I was really happy to get this. I think that Together Through Life is an underloved, underappreciated album because it, you know, sort of comes after modern times, which as we've discussed, Rob is the better of the two albums between that and Love and Theft.
Great stuff. It's still my favorite. It's still my favorite record
yes.
of the 20 of his of the 21st century, and that
Absolutely.
includes Rough and Ready Ways, which is
Same.
saying a lot.
Same. But then, and then since 2009, it's not like he's rested at all. That change that was coming on, sort of never got there. The fourth part of the day, thank God still hasn't come. I wanted to say one more thing just about the fourth part of the day thing. Seth Rogovoy did a very extensive sort of research on the fourth part of the day is already gone, that it may be a reference to the biblical books Ezra and Nehemiah, which are towards the end of the prophet era of the Bible. And there's just a bunch of stuff in there, and that there's a reference to fourth part of the day. So I would say if you're interested more in it, if you go to the blog Untold Dylan and just look up this song, it's just really interesting. There's a lot of good stuff on this song. Just a little plug for that blog, which I found very helpful.
Right. He did perform this live 22 times, which is actually more than I thought. I've, you know, I've, this is, it's not that I'm like tracking it all, but this is just not one that I've ever even like seen on YouTube. So I thought, oh, this will be one of those ones he never did live. Well, 22 isn't very much, but he did give it an outing
So
when the record was new. So.
I saw the first one.
Oh, did you?
I
Oh,
saw
okay.
the debut of it. So it's really strange. I don't know if you guys have this. Matt, something tells me you won't because you have like an encyclopedic memory of everything. But for some reason, I have one or two Bob Dylan shows that I just don't remember at all. I know I was at, I have the ticket, I've seen the set list, I have the like, this was one of them. I saw him in Madison in 2010. And I think that was the tour debut of it. It was the first. It was the first one, October 25th, 2010. He did it, and I have no memory of it at all. And to me, this seemed like a no-brainer for doing that for when he was doing that album song. But I would have just included it in the mix with Beyond Here Lies Nothing and what else? Forgetful Heart, or is that on Together Through
Yeah,
Life?
that's
Or is that
yeah. Yep.
So that was your plan. So, but yeah, only 22 times. So I'm pleased that I got to see one of them,
Oh, that's
even though I
great.
don't
Yeah.
remember.
All right, Matt, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree. I think, first of all, Together Through Life, let's just take some time to appreciate it because what a tough slot coming off of Time Out of Mind, Love and Theft, Modern Times. And apparently there were some of these I think were written for a soundtrack of a movie, but I don't
Right, the My
know.
Own Love Song
Okay.
movie. Yeah.
But I will go out on a record and say that this album does not contain the best songs. But for my money, it is the best sounding record that he has released. I think the whole thing just sounds gorgeous. It's so full, it's vibrant, it places you in that southwest part of the country
You get
in,
a feeling for
middle of the
Robert
afternoon.
Hunter's writing also in it
Yeah,
too. You know,
you
it
do.
feels
You
like a
do.
Grateful Dead album in many ways.
Yep. So I really like the sound of it. And I'll double down on what Henry was hinting at and indicating. I think this is a direct response to Sam Cooke's song, which was inspired by Blowin' in the Wind. And I think when Barack Obama was elected, Dylan was playing in St. Paul, and that night of the election, he was quoted as saying, "I was born in 1941. That was the year they bombed Pearl Harbor. I've been living in darkness ever since. It looks like things are going to change now." And that was probably around the time, right before he started writing these songs. And it just can't be a coincidence that there was the whole hope change, excitement with President Obama coming in. Bob makes that statement, comes out with a song about, kind of completing the circle of the civil rights anthems. And Sam Cooke's on the record as saying, "I can't believe that a white boy was singing these songs like Blowin' in the Wind, and I felt like I needed to respond in time." And Bob in the folk tradition, continues to build upon people, investing in these songs and leveraging them. So I think that's all great. I like the performance. This is an album that I can just put on, including this song, and just listen to. The songs aren't the deepest. There's not a lot of hidden meaning, or you're trying to figure out, like, what's that song about? Hell's my wife's hometown. That's pretty obvious, what that one's about. And, Forgetful Heart. They're pretty straightforward, but I think the whole album's just great. It's got a lot of consistency and integrity in the album. It's not like it's all over the place. It's very cohesive. The sound is great. The songs are fun. I think if there's one album where I think Bob Dylan is having the most fun and enjoyment performing, it's this one. So what's not to love about
Interesting.
it?
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I would argue that in terms of banger album openers, this is up there with Modern Times and Thunder on the Mountain, even Highway 61 like Rolling Stone. Like, to me, it Tangled in Blue, like the way Dylan is great at opening albums, and I love when he does it with an absolute, just banger. He doesn't do that with Rough and Rowdy Ways. Like, if I'm going to nitpick a little, I probably would have opened with False Prophet, and then like I would flipped one and two with Rough and Rowdy Ways, because just in my personal preference, I love when albums open with a bang. And Beyond Here Lies Nothing has that, and then the album, like you said, Matt, it just sonically is really good. It just moves very well. It has easy to remember lyrics that are thoughtful and interesting and referential. And yeah, I'm glad we got our Together Through Life love in there, Matt. I appreciate that.
And I mean, he put this record out the same year he put out Christmas in the Heart.
Christmas in the Heart.
I mean, what a year. What a year.
What
A
a year, yes.
what
guy
other
his
artist
age
could put
putting
out
out two
works like this?
records, I mean, good Lord. So
Yeah.
yeah. Yep. All right. Well, okay. Matt, we're gonna stick with the change theme. I wasn't purposely trying to duplicate, mirror these choices. It just sort of worked out that way. But your second song is from 1979, Slow Train Coming, Gonna Change My Way of Thinking, which I like the version on Slow Train Coming, but that's not why I picked it. But we'll get to that in a moment. So sorry, Matt, what are your feelings about this song?
I love this. I love this song. So first of all, sonically, the rhythm, the funk of this song, it's just right in the times, that late 70s. It's got a groove to it that, I mean, disregard the lyric. You could listen to this as an instrumental and it would just be a pleasant listening experience. It's got that very distinctive bass line and melody. So I love that. So obviously with the lyrics, it's very in your face, from his Born Again period. So that is naturally going to turn some people off. I think it's somewhat consistent with the rest of Born Again period, but this one's even more in your face than some of them. I enjoy listening to it. I think it's a true testament to where he was at that place in time, how he was feeling, that sense of desperation that, with a lot of Slow Train Coming songs, I feel that he is somewhat aggressive because he's trying to convince himself. Whereas in Saved, he's a little bit more comfortable in his own skin. And that's just, kind of how I interpret that. But, no, it's a period piece for him. It's in that Born Again period. I think it's a great song. I love listening to it. It's such a great groove. And you know
It
me,
really
I'm a big
is.
Union Sundown guy that, I love the groove. You may not like the lyrics, but I get caught up in the groove. So,
I just noticed, and again, this is completely unintentional, but in I Feel a Change Coming On, he talks to the subject of the song and he says, you're as whorish as ever. And then in this song, he says, sons becoming husbands to their mothers and old men turning young daughters into whores. So he keeps using that word. Again, it's not intentional.
and that might not be the nice reference to whores that we get tonight, Rob.
Never, that's true. This song, I love the wild singing he does on this. Like, he kind of just really lets his, like when he does the stripes on your shoulders, stripes on the back and on your hands, and he says, swords piercing your side. And he goes, blood and water flowing through the land. Like, he's really kind of like being
he's
that
really
preacher.
Leaning into it. Yeah.
Yeah. He's really leaning into it. And then I don't know which one is worse, doing your own thing or just being cool, which is just what a frame. Like, you know, I don't know yeah. which one is worse of being cool. And then I got a God-fearing woman, one I can easily afford. Easily she can afford. Do the Georgia crawl. She can walk in the spirit of the Lord. I mean, like it's this kind of incredibly stiff religious, you know, Bible quoting, and then also the sort of modern 70s slang that he's smashing together in this one song is really pretty crazy. But that's not even why I picked it, right? The reason I picked it is because on the covers record, the gospel songs of Bob Dylan, Bob is on that record with Mavis Staples, where she covers this song and they do a duet. But not only that, they do a comedy sketch. There is a straight up comedy sketch on that record. And I remembered this is pre iTunes. This is pre stream. You know, you could not download these things. Yeah. You had to go out and buy the CD. Yep. And I bought it because Bob Dylan was, I heard Bob was on it. I'm like, all right, I'll buy a whole CD just to hear Bob Dylan teaming up with Mavis Staples to sing one of his own songs. Right. So I put the CD on and Bob starts singing. First of all, he's singing different words, completely different words. So that's already, I'm like, okay. And then the song just stops and there's a knock at the door and here comes, hey, it's Mavis Staples. And they're doing this whole bit. And I'm like,
they do a little radio play, theater of the mind.
Yeah. I need to take some aspirin and lie down. What is happening? What now? Apparently, I learned later, this is apparently his own riff on a sketch that the Carter family did on one of their records. Mm. So this is Bob referencing that. But it's him and Mavis talking about being in Bob's studio. And you can look out on his porch and look straight out into Hawaii. And they talk about killing a chicken. And then they break it. They go back into the song, which is, again, completely different than the one from Slow Train Coming. And I always wanted to get to that on the show because I love it so completely. It's so goddamn bonkers about doing a comedy sketch with Mavis Staples. So, that's why I picked it. So, yeah. But Henry, what do you think about this song?
I am so glad that we get to discuss a gospel song. So to pull up the curtain, we obviously, you know, on our own group thread, we had a joke going around that the four songs Rob was going to pick for me were all from the gospel period, everyone's favorite Jewish person on Bob Dylan. But just today, Dylan FM posted a quote from Grail Marcus where he completely was shitting on the gospel period. He like went out and said, and you know, Rob, we've talked about before how I can't stand people who just their business is shitting on Bob Dylan for the sake of it. I just like, you know, but anyway, he said something to the effect of, I never want to hear any of his ideologically determined Christian songs again. I don't care how well-crafted they are, if they are, they're not alive. They're not human except for pressing on, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And I have to say on record that my response was, okay, Grail, observant Jew over here saying that I like these songs. So I just want to put that on the record. I like songs. And part of that is, like any Bob Dylan song, gospel included, you like any song, period, you can listen to it in whatever context you want. And my vast experience with this song is not just from listening to Slow Train Coming, but this was a staple from 2009 to 2011 in the set list. He opened the shows with it. It was a rockin' blues number, you know? And I mean, I think I saw it twice. He played it in Tel Aviv in 2011. Wow. Like, this is not, like, you can listen to these songs in any context you like. So, and you know, it's not like he had been playing it all throughout his career. He played it 71 through 80, then not till 87, and then not again till 2009. So Bob gets to decide how these are presented, and you as the listener get to decide how you want to experience them. So I guess for Grail, it's not working, but For me, it all works. Again, like I said, I took in the gospel stuff while I was taking in everything else. So while, sort of ideologically, some of the idea that Bob went to that in that period of time, some of that is somewhat painful for me. But also listening to these songs now, I love it. I'm here for it. I think this is a great rockin' blues number. And I think they do it on the video Trouble No More, right? Is it on? Is it? And it's like a really good performance with the backup singers and everything. So yeah, I don't have much to say about like the lyrics or anything. I just like it. It's a good blues song, and it's Bob Dylan. What's not to like?
The little skit Rob was talking about, it's on YouTube, so you can listen to it at home if you've never heard it.
Oh my God, I
And
love it so
the
much.
funny thing is, the original skit is Jimmie Rodgers and his mama
Huh.
in the house, and the Carter family knocks on the door,
There we
and
go.
they're
That's
hungry.
it. Okay.
And then if you look inside of the Rough and Rowdy Ways album, the inner sleeve has a picture from 1931 in Kentucky when Jimmie Rodgers and the Carter family were together. So, I mean, this is something he did in 2002. And then in 2009, as Henry was mentioning, the first time the voice of the generation, the leader of the counterculture who goes to China, the first song he plays in China is going to change my way of thinking. And he keeps the 2002 lyrics.
Oh,
You know,
did
I'm sitting
he?
at the, he did. I'm sitting at the welcome table.
Oh,
I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. I mean, these,
I
and the
remember that
funny
line.
thing
I
is,
remember hearing that line. It was, people laughed. It was funny the way he delivered it. Yeah. I mean,
And then in the original, he says a line about, you remember only about the brass ring, you forgot all about the golden rule. And then in the rewrite, he says, we're living by the golden rule. Whoever got the gold rules. And, so he kind of twists it up, plays a little joke. I mean, Rob, you mentioned this
amazing.
before, like randomly on BobDylan.com, you'll notice that he's gone in and tinkered with the lyrics to some obscure song he's never played live. How he picked this one out, he could have chosen any song to do this little skit, but he picked this one. I was digging a little bit more, and it sounds like he did this day after he recorded Waiting for You from
Wow.
the Yaya Sisterhood.
Divine Secret, yeah, Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood soundtrack.
So he was in the studio and he did this with Mavis Staples, and she said, yeah, he was constantly rewriting and showing me things. And she's like, who's going to sing that line about the horse? He's like, ah, we'll figure it out. And I guess they were in the studio till 1 in the morning
Oh my God.
putting this together. But then
Well,
7 years go by, and all of a sudden he's like, well, we're gonna go
yeah.
to China. We're gonna play Gonna Change My Way of Thinking. Which lyrics should I choose? Let's do the ones I rewrote 7 years ago.
Well, you
I
know
mean,
that
he didn't.
like he's like probably in this keeping her in the studio because we know he loves her so much. They've both gone on record that he's asked her to marry him like a million times. He's probably spent kept her all the, oh, let's do it again, Mavis, just to spend more time with her. We know Bob loves Mavis. The one
I'm
other
sure.
notable performance, Rob, was in 1987 during the rehearsals for the Grateful Dead tour that Henry mentioned. And I just want to take the opportunity to point out he also played Union Sundown with the Grateful Dead during that rehearsal. So Yes, wow.
any chance I get, I'm going to bring
You're
him
going to
in.
mention Union Sundown. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm sure
Henry,
it's.
your next song is Union
Yeah,
Sundown.
right. Exactly. I mean, I'm
Backed
sure
by
it's out.
popular demand.
I'm sure it's out there. I've just never bothered to look up. I want to know who the woman is in the sketch that's not Mavis, where because he says, "Mama, we got anything to
Mama, yeah.
eat?" And there's a woman who's like, "Sure, we got some chickens out there in the
We got
yard."
chickens
Who
out.
is
Well,
that?
we're gonna go knock a few of them off and fry them up.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Amazing.
I just love that thing so. Just the, and the idea of Bob Dylan being in a studio that looks out across the ocean.
Right.
I'm just like, I love this guy so much. It's just so much so fun.
It's like something that could have been on Theme Time Radio Hour. Occasionally they would have
Yes.
someone call in, and
Yeah.
do a written bit.
Oh man. I mean, it ends with, I'll tell you something, things you never had, you'll never miss. A brave man will kill you with a sword, a coward with a kiss. I mean, it's just like, oh man. And as you mentioned, Matt, this the BobDylan.com features the alternate lyrics as well as the original. It's the only it's the only song I can think of that does that, that actually just says, okay, this is a second version. We're not even going to try and, you know, massage the first one.
Wow.
To make it seem more like the way he's singing it now. It's just, no, here's two ver- you read the lyrics and then in all caps it says alternate version, and then you find the other one. So, oh man, I just,
that's wild. I can't recall BobDylan.com doing that for anything.
Right. That's no, right.
You reference this thing like at least once a show, that the BobDylan.com tinkering. So mm-hmm. It's definitely something we know you've researched.
I love when he just, excuse the language, fucks with people. Yes. I just love it. And I literally can remember, like I said, listening to it and just being like, wait, what? What is happening? You know? And then the song starts again. I'm like, oh man, I just listened to it like 1,000 times. I was like, I just can't get it. And hearing the band, you know, laughing in the background, like, oh man, this is just, I love this so much. So
great. Yeah, that last line's a killer too. You're right, Rob.
Oh, that's a good, it's, you know, just so good. So good.
Jesus all is right. Still in this version. And then at the end, he has to be referencing Judas, I think. The coward will kill.
The coward with a kiss. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Oh man.
And, and that line just the way it kind of reminds me of the line in Woody Guthrie song about some men will rob you with,
some rob you with a fountain pen. Yeah. Pretty Boy Floyd. Yeah. I saw it was another cover we didn't get around to doing. So, okay. All right. All right. So, all right. Henry, your next song was from 1967's John Wesley Harding. It's John Wesley Harding, the opening track to it.
Gosh, I wonder why you've never covered this one, Rob. Really, no one's ever requested this one.
Are you knocking John Wesley Harding?
Okay. No, I would never knock a Bob Dylan song. only at a bar with Matt will I share which songs I truly don't like, or with you offline, Rob.
Okay.
But no, I look, it's a nice song. It's the title track off of an album. A very good album that obviously, you know, totally threw everyone off. It is, I would not say it is the highlight of this album or the most memorable. In fact, you know, in my mind, I was, when you suggested to me, in my mind, I was just hearing like, oh yeah, that's the one, John Wesley Harding. Like I even did the bad Dylan impression in my mind because I just couldn't. So I don't know. What do you want me to say about this one, man? It's fine. It's a song. He probably should have called this album All Along the Watchtower, and that would have been the title track. I mean, it's, you know, he even said that he chose this character, John Wesley Hardin, for the protagonist over other bad men because his name fit in the tempo of the song, which also could be Dylan bullshit. You know, and he said that he added the G at the end by mistake, like whatever. I had heard that actually John Wesley Harding was one of those albums he wanted to get out quickly, and that mm-hmm. he had just, I think for this one, he picked one of the songs on it. Like not, he could have been anyone. And I don't remember why he wanted to get this one out so quickly. Maybe you guys do, but I don't know. To me, it's just a song. I don't have much to say about it.
I think it's interesting that he said in an interview at some point, maybe around the record or maybe after, because I know he didn't want to promote this. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to make a big deal of it. Like, he just wanted to just put it out. But he said this was the only song on the entire record that he didn't understand what it was about, but he wrote it anyway.
Me neither, Bob.
Right? Well, I mean, but what's so funny is because this is, of course, the most straightforward song. It's
right,
just,
it's just a story.
It's just a story about this character. I mean,
St. Augustine is so obvious, right?
Yeah. I mean, on a record about, I would argue, the America as it is, you know, the land is populated with you know, rounders and crooks and people of faith and drifters and all this. This is just a song about one of the kinds of guys that roamed the landscape in the America that he's talking about. I will say, yeah, the song is incredibly simple. I think it's a great way to open the record because it's very bright. But the thing I love about it the most is Ken Buttrey's drumming. I don't really notice that stuff too much. It's just not, my ear just doesn't pick that up. But he is, there's a point where he just goes like, does this little drum pattern. He's like, and it's just, it sounds like, oh my God, this guy, like he's the spine of the song. Mm-hmm. You know, he's, I mean, he almost is keeping Bob kind of focused awake a little in this tight little, Well, I mean, obviously Bob felt something similar to you, Henry, because he's never done it live.
Right.
Never been done live. But I don't know. I like this song. Just a simple little ballad about, you know, one of these outlaws. Like, that's it. That's all. Sometimes it all it has to be. So I don't know. I've always liked it.
Good.
Matt, are you going to, where are you come down on this?
First of all, I want to congratulate you on this master setup that you put together here. So ending the last song on a line that reminds us of Pretty Boy Floyd, and then turning around and coming out with Dylan's version of Pretty Boy Floyd, John Wesley Hart. And that's brilliant. Wow. That's why you're the best in the business.
Super genius.
But, so Dylan has said he wrote the tune, loved the tune, needed words, came out with this. I've also read that what you said, Robbie, didn't know what to do with it. So he named the album John Wesley Harding just because he was worried the song wasn't strong enough in comparison to the others on there. So in some ways, it reminds me a little of Rainy Day Wimp, where he was a little dismissive of the first song, kind of like, let's get this one out of the way, and then we'll get to the regular album. I personally love this song. I think it's great to listen to. It's, you know, I like the outlaw ballads, you know. Is it his best outlaw ballad ever? Maybe not, which the master plan that Rob's unrolling here is starting to become obvious. You know, this was a precursor to Joey when he was really his with outlaw ballads.
How dare you? How dare you?
You almost made it to the end without a Joey reference.
I think this is great. It's within the tradition. It's an outlaw ballad. It's very much like Pretty Boy Floyd. You know, he was John Wesley Harding a friend to the poor? No, he was a ruthless killer. He was an outlaw gunslinger. Dylan romanticizes him in the tradition. That's what you did, you know, just like Pretty Boy Floyd, you know, left the $1,000 bill under the napkin. Did he probably do that? Probably not. But, you know, there was some romanticism about the West, the American spirit of freedom, liberty. I'm not going to let the law infringe upon me is very much alive in this album and in this song. And if you put it in the context, like Henry was, 1967, what's going on in the country? You know, Bob is coming off of Blonde on Blonde, which really set the stage for the psychedelia that everybody just kind of followed. And
which he then completely rejects.
Right, right.
But if you read these lyrics to this album, it's as psychedelic as anything else. It just doesn't sound as psychedelic. It's not Strawberry Alarm Clock. It's not, you know, Crimson and Clover.
Right.
You know,
White Rabbit.
It's not
Sergeant
Pepper or White Rabbit like that. Yeah. But you read some of these lyrics, you know, these are hallucinogenic, trippy. They're absurd. They're surreal. They're all the things that you want, but in a stripped down delivery. That it doesn't mask it. It just confronts you with what it is. And I think had he started with something like I Dreamed I Saw St. Augustine, maybe it's hard to get into the album, but this is kind of like a gateway song where it's like, come on in, welcome in. It's such a pleasant earworm to listen to this tune. And oh, it's a familiar outlaw ballad. And then the next thing you know, and I think it is like America. Describing a time in America. I've said before on this podcast, I think As I Went Out One Morning is a statement on America. And you can see a lot of that in this album. So my opinion of this song is very high. I think it's, you know, is it Visions of Johanna? No, it's not. Does it serve a very meaningful purpose? And is it effective at what it does as an album opener? I'd say absolutely. People love this album. Like,
yeah,
you know how we are, we Bob Dylan people. I mean, we're exclusive and we're snobs. And you have to think that John Wesley Harding, one of his best albums, just because it's not like everything else in 67.
Right.
And this is, I think, is one of the reasons why it's so effective. If you put John Wesley Harding on, you know, you're not done until, you know, you're down along the cove or you'll be his baby tonight. You're going to listen to the whole thing. So I think if this was an off-putting song, you don't get everything else. So my opinion of it, very, very high.
It's very interesting you said that, because while I, you know, obviously I didn't praise it that much at the beginning of this discussion, it's not one of my favorites. I had to listen to the rest of the album after I listened to it. Like, I didn't just, okay, Rob gave me this song, which I don't love. I'm just going to listen to it, make some notes, and then be done. I had to listen to the whole album. And which, you know, kind of made me think, first of all, Rob, in gratitude to you, you know, this exercise that you gave us, this homework assignment, kind of gave me that opportunity to do that with all of these albums and the songs that, you know, they accompanied. Because I'm sort of personally, to borrow a Taylor Swift term, in an era where I'm mostly listening, when I listen to Bob Dylan, I'm mostly listening to live recordings from, let's say, 1990 on. You know, like, that's just and I haven't gone back to albums lately. And so it was such a treat to go back to John Wesley Harding, an album I probably haven't listened to in a couple of years. So I will say, Matt, you know, it is an inviting song in, and it did call me to listen to the rest of the album.
So if I can read the last stanza, tell me if this doesn't sound like Bob Dylan describing himself. All across the telegraph, his name did resound, but no charge held against him could they prove. And there was no man around who could track or chain him down. He was never known to make a foolish move.
Yeah.
How perfect is that?
you could put that on
a tombstone.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that would be a great quote about Bob Dylan. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That could be the little intro before he comes on stage.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. I think you should read it, Matt. You read it quite well.
Yeah, a couple
as
of months
as
ago,
Santos retires. I'll post my resume.
A couple of months ago, I bought this on vinyl. And I put it on in the morning, and I start work before my wife does. And so I have, like, you know, I'm like, oh, I'll just listen to whatever I want. And I just put it on, and it was like a bright, sunny day. And this song just matched it perfectly. I'm like, and for how dark a record it is, and this is a dark record, it doesn't sound dark. You're talking about it. It's so inviting. And so that, to me, that's why, as you were saying, Matt, like, if you open this with, I saw St. Augustine, you'd be like, oh my God. all right. I mean, I love that song, but you're like, oh, all right. This is, I'm in, I really got to lay down here. This is going to be a lot. But instead, it's just John Wesley, you know, like, it's a nice little ballad. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of lulling you in, and then I'm going to hit you with a 2x4 with the other stuff. But for now, it's just a nice song. I would have loved to hear him do this live, but fortunately, no live performances of this exist. So
I'm coming around, guys. You're convincing.
We're very convincing you. Okay. All right. Well, speaking of no live performances, Matt, I gave you quite the assignment with this next song, which is an outtake from the Hearts of Fire sessions.
Right up my alley.
Namely, Night After Night, which is absolutely one of the most obscure songs in his canon. This is one of those songs that I think is objectively terrible, but I love it. But I love it anyway. I love how terrible this song is, because it is Bob Dylan, I think, in the shittiest of moods possible. And he is just almost like, why did I do this? Why did I agree to this? All right, I'm going to write these words. I'm going to get this song is bonkers, crazy, and I love it, but it is also terrible. I don't know. Matt, do you have the same conclusion?
I definitely disagree that this is terrible. This is one
it's
of those
wonderfully terrible
80s songs. Oh, it is probably the I'm going to go on the limb and say that Paul Simon heard this and decided to use the trumpet in You Can Call Me Al. Because this is
And
probably
the
the best
beat.
use of a trumpet and the beat. So for those of you who are listening who have never heard this, you're going to struggle finding it on YouTube or Spotify. Mm-hmm. Bob,
send me a message. I'll get it to you.
So Henry will distribute it. But imagine a very vigorous trumpet player, and you are getting ready to join the carnival cruise, and there's a conga line forming. And you see Bob Dylan starring on an episode of The Love Boat as a down and out private investigator who just can't find love. I mean, this song's got everything. It's got a beat that you won't believe if you've
it's
never
so
heard
catchy. It's so
it is.
Catchy.
It is. So it's. I wouldn't say it's featured in Hearts of Fire. For those of you who are really familiar with the movie, there's that, I'll call it famous scene. I'm doing the air quotes. The famous scene for the movie in the barn where he sings A Couple More Years to Fiona. But just prior to that, when she speeds up to his place, he's lying on the couch with earphones on, headphones on, like sleeping, listening to Night After Night, which if you hear this, this is not a song you put on to take a rest. Like if you want to take a little nap, you can put on, you know, Murder
John Wesley Harding.
but this song will have you up in the conga line, you know, dancing with Kathy Lee Griffin. So I think this is great. It's Band of the Hand ish. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's the distant cousin of Band of the Hand. To me, I love the 80s. Bright shirts, bright colors, bright smiles. This song is just bright. It's a love song, but with all Bob Dylan love songs, there's just that tinge of danger and apocalypse just around the corner.
Violence, me, lots of violence.
Just perfect combination, you know. Night after night, you wander the streets of my mind. Night after night, don't know what you think you will find. No place to go, no place to turn. Everything around you seems to burn, burn, burn. And there's never any mercy in sight night after night. I mean, who else could put these together? I think it's wonderful. It's just, it makes me smile listening to them. How could it not?
How could it not?
I picture him in just such a bad mood and being like, I got to crank out another song. And so he's just like, all right, I'm not going to give any, there's no relief to this song. I mean, he literally says, I mean, it's this parade of horrible events. Night after night, some new plan to blow up the world. Night after night, some old man kissing some young girl. Again, those could be lines right out
Yikes.
Of Band on the Hand. You look for salvation, you find none. Just another broken heart, another barrel of a gun, just another stick of dynamite. Night after night, and then night after night, you drop dead in your bed. Night after night, another bottle finds a head. Night after night, I think about cutting you loose, but I just can't do it. What would be the use? So I just keep holding you tight night after night. It, when I say it's terrible, I mean terrible in the best possible way, in that it is so perverse, that it is so, it's so catchy and so, like, it is. It's like 80s. It's like the 80s song the 80s have ever 80s'd. And yet it's
right.
Like just Bob being so down. And then the fact that it was like meant to be on a soundtrack record. Like it's just, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. It's a crazy ass.
I'm
song.
Not afraid of the hot take, but this is the positively fourth street of the 1980s where you have this
wow.
beautiful melodic tune with just these kind of biting dark lyrics behind it. And this one's got it. I mean, yeah, it's just wonderful.
A man is in a bad mood when he did this. So, all right, Henry, your thoughts on Night After Night?
I had to, as soon as you said it, I was like, could that be from? And then I had to mute myself and then listen to that opening bit on my, pull it up on iTunes, on my iTunes. And yeah, that just brings me back to just pouring over every single thing that Dylan could have possibly recorded. And I mean, that trumpet, it's so 80s,
oh, yeah.
like sax trumpety that it actually sounds like a synthesizer is just playing it, like with the trumpet effect on, like that drum machine. This is just like, it's like the 80s and Bob Dylan had a baby, and this is the baby that they had. And its cousins are his verse and We Are the World and Band of the Hand. Like, it's like you said, it's the most the 80s have ever 80s'd. And the fact that, and like the lyrics are completely bonkers, but they're kind of great Bob Dylan lyrics. Like, if you were like, the
Absolutely.
shit that Bob Dylan throws away is genius. Like, it's staggering. He is just able to just, it's 2 minutes and 53 seconds. This isn't exactly a murder ballad, right? This isn't Highlands here. This is it. How many under 3 minute Bob Dylan songs do you know? So he clearly just, I don't even think that band is live in the studio with him. Like, someone hit record and he's sort of like getting through it the way he's singing, but his voice is so good that it sounds good. It works. So
Yeah, if
yeah,
you
I'm
like
a,
Band of
I'm
the
a
Hand, you're gonna love Night After Night, that's for sure.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, I can get it to you if you send me a message.
And
So
it's not on the soundtrack record.
yeah,
Like, no, you
it's
would
in the
think
movie. Why
it's
isn't it the sound?
like, I mean, but I mean, he was desperate for inspiration on that record. You're like, we just rejected an original Bob Dylan's, like, what?
Yeah.
Oh my God. But I like I said, like I recalled about changing my thinking. I remember I got this as a bootleg, not and I was like, ooh, there's another Dylan song I don't know about. And then what? What is this?
What is this?
It's like the sax guy from The Lost Boys playing in the back. Like, he has that same kind of
Right.
energy during the
Oh,
verses.
right. You mean the long curly bald.
Yeah. It just has that energy to it.
Oh, totally.
It's just a crazy ass song.
Well, I have a very important question for you guys that I think I asked when we did Band of the Hand. Did you guys see Hearts of Fire in the theater when it came out? No. Okay. Like, no one
I was I
did,
was I was 15. I would not have even been on my I
right?
highly doubt it ever even played in my theater anywhere near me. So
You were more likely to see Ronaldo and Clara.
yeah, well, I
I
mean, I
know you
would I
don't
wouldn't
know.
sit through it now, but
But
yeah. No, I mean, I thought, oof,
can you
boy.
imagine a major motion picture containing both this song and the most legendary punch thrown in
Yes.
Hollywood history?
I
I just, Bob, we
don't
talked
know,
about
his
this.
Bastin and Anonymous punch is pretty
Well,
up
that's what we
there.
talked. Remember, we talked about that on the episode I did with Jason MD. Why do they keep putting Bob Dylan in movies where he has to show physical action? He cannot do it.
I mean,
He's incapable.
he's got some guns. We know he boxes, right?
He
knows that, right? Well, Jed, he knows how to throw a punch, but just not in a movie. The minute the camera's on him, he just freezes up. So,
I like his
anyway.
Bastin and Anonymous punch. I think it's a good punch.
Okay. All right. Well. Then, by the time you're all hearing this episode, the Masked and Anonymous episode has aired. By the time we're recording it, it has not. So, Henry, don't listen to that episode because I'm kind of
Okay.
critical of Bob Dylan's
I want,
punch throwing in
hey,
an episode.
I'll take it. I'll take it in.
All right.
Don't tell me not to listen to a Pod Dylan record. That's my
Fair enough. All
Sunday
right.
morning
Since
ritual.
I'm doing my, it's reverse psychology.
Yes,
Okay.
it's
So,
working.
let's move on to Henry, your last song. Another soundtrack take, although this one's a little more on the serious side. And that's from 2005's film North Country, which is Tell O' Bill, which I absolutely love. I love this song and I'm mad we didn't get to it. So I'm finally going to talk about it here. What do you think about Tell O' Bill?
This was like the greatest gift you could give me to that this be the final song. I know we have a couple more, but that you like, I would have picked this one anyway to talk with you on. Like, we just didn't get to it. Like,
Yeah.
I this is one of my all-time favorite Bob Dylan songs. Like I said, I'm very into listening to 21st century Bob, and I have listened to. Oh my God. Okay. First of all, I love this song. And this was one that I bought the soundtrack so that I could get the one song, of course. Of course, later it was on iTunes, so that was fine. But I can't believe this song exists and isn't on Modern Times. Like, It's so good. It's one of his best songs. I mean, Rolling Stone did a top 25 list of his 21st century songs. By the way, only 25. Come on, let's be real here. But anyway, they ranked it 15, and I would say that's pretty reasonable for of his 21st century song for this to be like smack in the middle. It's not his greatest ever of that era, but it's really, really good. It's unbelievable to me that of all the things that have been bootlegged and have gotten out into the public, that the Tell Old Bill sessions got out there in like 2006 or something, like, or like really quickly. And you know, like, it took Bob Dylan, the bootleg series, like 40 years to put out The Cutting Edge, but we, you know, bootlegging of the 1965 sessions had been out there forever, right? And that in like 21st century Bob, like, that stuff got locked up. It's I don't know how this got leaked out. I mean, maybe that's why we never saw Alanna Fremerman again. Maybe she put that out there. But so I've just been listening to the Telltale Sign sessions. And again, like you said, for Night After Night, for anyone that hasn't heard these, it's a 7 or 8 track bootleg of all the different ways Bob did this song, which of course ends with, or almost ends with, the minor key that we see on Telltale Signs. And I just want to share, I listened to it today and wrote down what Bob says. So they go through this whole session of Tell Old Bill in many different iterations. I mean, a fiddle version, a country version, a waltz version in 3/4 time, a one where he talks about adding in a little turnaround, and I'll get to that in a second. And then a boogie-woogie version, right? All these great versions. And then towards the end of the session, he's kind of both exasperately and jokingly says, maybe we should just change it all totally. Change the melody, change everything about it. Put it in a minor key. I mean, everything. Let's see what happens. Keep the same form, though. Okay, let's try this one. Okay, we'll start from the top. And then he laughs even, he coughs. He says, okay, here we go. We got about two takes left. Two takes left in me. And I mean, he's both having fun and kind of tired. And I just want to express to you guys, as a musician, it's not an easy thing if a band leader says to you, we're going to take a song that we've been doing in a major key, even in different styles and tempos, and suddenly put it in a minor key. That's a hard thing to do. And the band kind of, like, he sings it a little bit to like help them, and the band just kind of gets into it. He plays it a little bit on piano. And so just like the way that Bob, to that it's clear that we get like an insight into what the recording process is like with modern Bob. And I'm just so appreciative of that, for bootleg that, and that Bob really cares about the stuff he's recording in this period of time. Like, he spent a lot of time on this one song that was on one soundtrack, and then that other version that was he didn't use was so good he put it on Telltale Signs. And that's not even getting into the whole, like, all the lyrics and the history of this song as a traditional song. I'm sure you guys know all that stuff too, and I'll let one of you speak, but I'm just thank you for letting me talk about this. I love Tell Old Bill, and I love the Tell Old Bill sessions, and I love the minor version of this.
I got the record like you. I bought the soundtrack just to get the song, and I loved it. I don't know what it's about. I can't make really heads or tails of what is even really happening. And as sometimes the case with Bob, there'll be one line or one verse that I can kind of hook into. And that to me is what the song is about, even if the rest of it doesn't match. And so, and I love the vocal performance. I have that bootleg, Henry. It's fantastic hearing him just, it's like that question I was been asking people in the show, what
What is it
session would you
like?
want to be on the fly on the wall for? It's just so instructive to hear him be there and just be the guy that's driving this and telling them. But the penultimate verse in this is, and he's not whispering it. It's not like it's in Delia, but he's not singing loudly either. He's kind of just sort of mid-tone. But I love when he says, "Tell old Bill when he comes home, anything is worth a try. Tell him that I'm not alone, that the hour has come to do or die." There's again, in the greater context of the song, I don't know what it means, but I know what it means to me. And to me, there's like that feeling of this guy is approaching, this guy, the singer is approaching a moment in his life. Something big is coming and he's gearing up to take it on. And the bill in the song, the bill is either a literal person or maybe more likely, I guess, in my head, like the bill is the kind of maybe God or just the moment. And it's Bill is this sort of force. And he's like, I got to get ready when Bill is home because the hour has come to do or die. There's something about it, this kind of like a guy stealing himself up for some moment that he has to face. And that's what I hear in just that verse.
Isn't it death, though? I mean, you know, even the Edgar Allan Poe references in it, like it seems like he's waiting for death.
It could be. It's just like when I hear him the way he's singing, I don't get that. Like, I don't I get it intellectually, but I don't feel it when I hear it. That kind of thing. There's something to me. There's something about a guy who's just kind of like in. He's kind of getting ready for this thing that he has to face. And I love it. And yeah, it's you know, like, man, I'm always fascinated. How does one even write a song for a soundtrack? Do you watch the movie and then you let it ruminate in your head? Does he have a piece of a song laying around? And he's like, well, this could work. You know, like, I would love to know that. I'm like, you know, do they screen the movie for him? I mean, what, you know, I find that fascinating. But I just think it's such a terrific song. And I'm so glad that they finally put it on Telltale Signs, because otherwise it was kind of hard to get or hear, really, to even know about. And I think it's one of his more significant works of the 21st century. And so I'm glad it's kind of been like folded into the corpus of his record so people know it exists. So, by the way, it's funny enough, on BobDylan.com, there are no lyrics to this song. You have to go find them somewhere else, which is very weird. Yeah. No, it's just a blank page. And of course, it's been performed zero times live. Matt, what do you feel about Tell Little Bill?
Well, I have a lot to say. I agree with both of you. Where to start? So, Rob, I think I see it like you do. Like, I see a guy sitting there facing an inevitability. And he's alternating between looking back, reminiscing, and looking forward. And this is one of those songs where I don't think there's a literal narrative. I think this is one where he's trying to create a mood or an atmosphere and just envelop you in this time and space. You know, the evening sun is sinking low. The iron clouds go floating by. Snowflakes falling in my hair. I mean, there's nothing going on. This guy's, I think you're right. I think he's preparing for something, building up the courage. And the key is that penultimate verse. Bill doesn't come home. Bill is dead. You know, they brought Bill home in a hurry up wagon this morning to tie back to, Self-Portrait when he covered the Bob Gibson song, which is my favorite performance on that bootleg series, Another Self-Portrait, is Tell Old Bill. You know, you pick these songs at random, but I see all kinds of themes. And, you know, really the theme is that Bob's been, for all the variety in presentation with Bob, he's actually been pretty consistent all the time. He's just multifaceted. He contains multitudes. So he looks like he's random. But we talked about the murder ballads. We talked about the homage to all of his influences in Self-Portrait. We talked about him building in the folk process, taking songs, adding lyrics, creating versions. This is one of them, you know, and he puts on another Self-Portrait, the original cover. And this is his version of this. No different than Scarlet Town is his version of, you know, the original Barbara Allen. You know, he takes it and he takes it to another level with Scarlet Town, and Scarlet Town puts you in a place and you can feel it. You know, you don't know what the hell's going on in Scarlet Town, but you're
there and you're trying to figure out what's going on, just like the narrator. I feel the same way about this. He's created a mood and an atmosphere with these lyrics. I think you're 100% right, Rob, because Bill does not come home. Bill's dead. He dies in the song. And the whole thing is tell him when he comes home to leave them downtown girls alone. So he's not coming home. And this guy, you know, he's sitting there. He's like, tell old Bill when he comes home. He's kind of acknowledging that, like, this is inevitable. Like, I'm not coming back from where I'm going. And we don't know where he's going, but he creates this mood that all of us have had, that kind of moment of dread when you have to do something you're not really looking forward to doing, but you nevertheless must. So I agree with you there. And Henry, I couldn't agree more with you that of all the songs in the Dylan canon, I mean, this one's fairly insignificant in his canon. I mean, is it better than anything else anybody has ever done? Yes, it is, because he's Bob Dylan.
Right, of course.
But for him, you know, this isn't even a top 200 song, maybe. But getting a peek behind the curtains in terms of how it was recorded, it's just absolutely amazing. You know, and I think this was recorded in a studio in Pennsylvania. I remember
Correct.
Seeing that somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was probably somebody there who allowed it to leak. I don't think he's ever gone back to Pennsylvania, probably for that reason.
Right.
But thank the stars that we got to hear this, because this is one of the things I love the most about Bob Dylan, is I love how hard he works. I love the creative process. I love the experimentation. And you get to be a fly on the wall while he's creating this. And Henry's not overselling it. I mean, he's changing everything, the melody, the key, the tempo. Each version is very distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
and
not
great,
just,
by the way.
And great, each in their own right. And I've listened to the version on Telltale Signs so many times that in my head, I can't remember what the one on the soundtrack sounds like, because that one's not my favorite. And it just makes my mind wander. And the songs that I like better, the songs that I think are more important or more intricate, what do those variations sound like? Did he go through this type of process for all? Like Cutting Edge is a great example that we got to hear for those magnificent songs from 64 to 66. You know, what I wouldn't give to hear the Old Mercy songs all the way through, or the Love and Theft songs. You get snippets here and there, but to see the whole thing for a song and to see what he can do is just absolutely amazing for the fans like us who lap this kind of stuff up. So top-notch selection here, Rob.
I've always loved it, and I feel like it's been underappreciated. And so I always wanted to get to it, and so I was like, well, I got to add it to the list. So I'm glad you guys like it as much as I do. I just think it's just a terrific song.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say a couple more things, if I may, about it. You know, what you were saying, Matt, first of all, I wanted to respond to that about the studio and the snippets into the studio in sort of the modern era. You know, there's a little bit of that when you hear a variation of something on Telltale Signs. So like you get a variation of Someday Baby and March into the City, right? Things like that. But you're forced to imagine what happened to get it from that to track five, Someday Baby on Modern Times, right? Your mind does that thing if you're a Bob Dylan fan. But here we got to actually hear it. Like I wanted to, I wrote down another part that just really got me as a musician. He says to the guys, maybe we'll do it another way. He said, and we'll put a turnaround in it all the time. And the guy, someone in the background, Stu or something, says, turnaround? And he says, yeah, maybe we should stop it. We should stop the turnaround. And they're like, and someone says another clarifying question or phrase. And Bob describes vocally what he means to do with the guitar. He literally goes, do, 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 do. And then we'll stop it. And we'll do it, you know, one, two, three, four. And they just go right into it. And the drums go. And George Roselli knows to stop it. And then Stu goes, do, 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 do. And then there's a beat, and then the next verse picks up. And it's just this wonderful moment of seeing master musicians, not just Bob, all of them, work together. And you could also see the level of professionalism and why Bob worked with those guys for a long time while he still works with one of them. They're his guys, they're his band. They get him. And when he says it, they do it. They're able to do it, even if it's abstract or, they're just whatever he says goes. And so I just love that. And then I wanted to say a couple other things. I remember at the time that this was a huge surprise in terms of Bob vocally, because there's a big shift in his voice from between Time Out of Mind and Love and Theft, and then again between Love and Theft and Modern Times. I would say Love and Theft, that his voice sonically, or whatever you want to call it, vocally, it's not, he's more gravelly. You could just, there's a difference when it goes to Modern Times. Would you guys agree with that? His voice gets better with Modern Times, right? I put better in air quotes because it's all good. But this came out, I think, before Modern Times in 2005, right? And I remember hearing it and just being blown away. Like, wait a minute, his voice, it's, that when he whispers, when he comes home, and you're just like, whoa, Bob can still sing like that. And then, of course, Modern Times vocally is gorgeous. So I just remember that I have that sense memory of just being knocked to the floor. I couldn't believe that this song existed. And that goes along with, the Ralph Stanley duet and Waiting for You and all that stuff all that soundtrack stuff that came around this time, the Sopranos one, Return to Me, and all that stuff. But I just remember being like, wow, this is incredible. And then a year later, Modern Times came off. Rob, I want to go on a limb here and reference a previous episode of yours, with Mezzo Mod, the Greatest Hits Volume 4. And I'm going to say on the record, even with the limitations that you put of, I think it was 11 tracks, right?
12,
Well,
I think.
I think Tell Old Bill makes it for me on Greatest Hits.
Yeah, now that you say, I feel bad that I didn't include. Yeah, I probably should have gone on there.
But it's hard. I mean, what do you take off, right? I mean, I made mine, but at the time, like, now I'm going to go back and I'm putting that on there. Like, this is a greatest, this is an all-time great from the 21st century, for sure.
Absolutely. Well said. All right. Awesome. I'm glad you
You
guys all feel the
mentioned
same way.
Ray Padgett's newsletter in his book, which Pledge of My Time, which is great. Combining the interviews he has with the musicians who work with Bob and listening to something like this, I mean, it just paints a picture for all of us on the outside of what that creative process is like. We're so fortunate to get these insights and to see it. And I hope, I know, Rob, that the Dylan office listens to each and every Pod Dylan podcast. So I just want to lobby them to open up the vault even more, because we do appreciate all the works in progress and the journey. I mean, we're with him on the journey, sink or swim, all the way.
If the Dylan office listens to the show, what have they been waiting for? To get a hold of me, guys. Yeah, no, this I just think this is such a true. And he said the insight of getting to see how hard he works. Not that that's surprising, but to
For
hear
one
it.
song, for one
For
song, for
one
a
song,
soundtrack, for a
right?
movie that bombed.
Yeah, amazing. It's just absolutely amazing, amazing stuff. So, okay, Matt, your last song. We're staying in the 80s,
All right.
1985's "Trust Yourself" from Empire Burlesque.
Oh my God.
I love this
Oh, I
song.
could see the look of jealousy on Henry's face because I know this song.
I love Bob being comfortable giving kind of life advice. He kind of pulled away from that as he stopped becoming the voice of a generation. But this one is straight ahead. This is how you to live your life. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bob Dylan. I really appreciate that. So, your thoughts on Trust Yourself?
Well, it's a rocker. I mean, it's a great song. I, as most of the Pod Dylan fanatics know, I'm a big fan of the 80s. I forgot how great this one was. So what I want to highlight on this song is the bridge. But just the regular verses. I mean, it's a pretty standard rock and roll song, but like it's got a catchy title, Trust Yourself, you know, and he gets to it in a good way. It's a good message. It's like, believe in yourself, don't listen to others, don't even trust me, the singer. I think it's interesting, you know, the voice of the generation, you know, the prophet, you know, everybody. This is his way of saying, you know, trust yourself, like don't look to me for answers. And I think the placement in the mid-80s, it also supports the you know, the notion that he was, you know, proselytizing a little bit in the late 70s and early 80s. And now he's like, you know what, just yeah, trust yourself. Like don't look for me for the answers. But I wanna share one of my favorite stories. Most good Bob Dylan fans have heard this. I shouldn't say good Bob Dylan fans. Most crazy Bob Dylan fans have heard this before. But there's a story about Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen driving around, and Just Like a Woman comes on the radio, and Bob turns it up. Leonard Cohen is retelling the story, and he says, when the bridge comes, Bob looks at him and goes, "A lot of 18-wheelers have driven over that bridge." And Leonard Cohen said, "I took that to mean that it was a really strong bridge." So, not that you asked me to rank Bob's best bridges, but you know, I won't dispute that the one in Just Like a Woman's number one. The Ballad of a Thin Man Bridge is probably number two, but holy cow, out of nowhere in this fairly standard, you know, 80s rock ballad empowerment song, the, you know, go individual, you get this bridge out of nowhere. And I kind of teased a little bit that we weren't done with the whores, Henry. Well, here it is. So the bridge kicks in. Well, you're on your own. You always were in the land of wolves and thieves, which I always thought he said whores and thieves. So I've always misheard that one. But he says, don't put your hope in ungodly men or be a slave to what someone else believes. So I think this is a killer, killer bridge. It's a rocking song. He played this one quite a bit. It's got, it's end capped it, by two very famous performances. So it's been played 25 times live. The first one was Farm Aid with Willie Nelson on acoustic guitar. And everybody knows the story about Bob creating Farm Aid against the wishes of the promoters of Live Aid at the time. And then the last performance of this is that famous show in Locarno, Switzerland, when Bob describes it in Chronicles, that he had that epiphany on stage. Where he said, "I am determined to stand whether God will deliver me or not." And all of a sudden, his recollection of Lonnie Johnson teaching him the mathematical triad way of playing the guitar comes to him. He realizes he can play any song in his canon. And then the never-ending tour is launched. So this was the second to last song, penultimate song from that concert, followed by Blowin' in the Wind. And that was the last time he ever played it. But, I think this is a great one. I think this is a tremendous song. It, if you listen to Empire Burlesque, you know, it's
And you should
constantly,
listen to Empire Burlesque.
and you should, you know, it gets denigrated a lot for the
Yeah, no,
production.
it's yeah.
But this song isn't too heavy-handed in the production. Of all the songs, obviously, other than Dark Eyes, this is the one that is the probably the most straightforward sounding 80s rock song. And I'm sure most of the people listening to this don't listen to this one very often. Pull this one up, and you'll be surprised that this one's pretty straightforward. This one rocks. And then go listen to the Farm Aid version. I mean, he really leans into it, and he's really rocking. The Queens of Rhythm are playing, the Heartbreakers are backing him. And it's also where we get that famous gif of him kind of
The
pointing
point, double
awkwardly,
point.
the double point to the crowd. It comes from Farm Aid, this song, this performance. So yeah, I love everything 80s Bob. I love this song too, and you know, no bad words to talk about this one.
In the 90s, there was a t-shirt that he was selling at his concerts with this, Trust Yourself, emblazoned just that phrase on a black t-shirt. White, yes. White lettering on a black t-shirt. And it just said, trust yourself. And then in the back, it had like his tour dates. Now, A, I thought that was very instructive that they would pull such an obscure song and put it on merch, which made me think Bob must, you know, maybe he doesn't play it anymore, but he must like this song on some level. I don't think they would just be pulling out old Empire Burlesque songs to slap on t-shirts. So I bought the shirt because I always liked the song. I always thought it was really, I love Bob's self-reproach. I love the look not for where answers can be found. Don't trust me to show you love when my love may be only lust. I love that. Don't even trust me. Don't even trust the guy who's giving you the advice. But anyway, I bought the shirt and I wore it different times. And then sometime around 90, this would have been 95, I was with my pal Dan Eager, who I've mentioned on the show a bunch of times before. We've been seeing Bob together for 30 years. We went to a diner on our lunch hour. We worked together and we went to a diner in New Jersey on my lunch hour, and we're walking out and I have the shirt on. It's a summer day. So I just have the t-shirt on, and this older couple says, they see the shirt. I guess I'd gotten up and I don't know. They saw it. This was the second time they saw it and they knew to stop me. And they said, they look at the shirt and they point to it and they go, what does that mean? And I was sort of curious. I was like, what? You know, I looked down, like, what? I said, it's a Bob Dylan lyric. It's a Bob Dylan tour shirt. And they pause and they say, the only person to trust is God. That shirt is very offensive. Well,
oh my God.
Enjoy your mozzarella sticks, folks. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, so
I don't want you to feel bad, but you missed a golden opportunity if they said, what is that? It was your chance to say, well, you're on your own. You always were.
You know, where were you in 1995, Matt? I mean, come on. Yeah. And so I'm like, well, Bob's still offending people in 1995, even with his merch. So, yeah, it really set those people off for some strange reason. My big thing with Empire Burlesque is I think the songs on it are, as always, great. And then some of them are completely ruined by the production, just completely demolished by the production. And luckily, as you just talked about, Matt, this one escapes that. Arthur Baker didn't add 75 things to it to clunk it up. It's fairly straightforward, you know. And so I always thought it's terrific. And I am sorry that it has only been done in the mid 80s 25 times. I think this is durable for something. I would like to hear him play this ad infinitum, and he really has not, which is too bad, because I think this is just a really tough, direct, great little song. And again, it's another one I always wanted to get to. So, all right, Henry, your thoughts on Trust Yourself?
Oh my God, this is such a great rocker. I love this. I was when you were saying the thing about the bridge, I was like, yes, yes, he's talking about the bridge, because it's got one of those perfect, you know, musical climbs where it's like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, trust yourself. Like, it goes right into, you know, it just perfectly goes from the bridge to the chorus. I love that. It's a total, like, mover, you know. Yeah. I was like, you know, dancing and right here at my microphone. It's so good. This is, I really was being sincere when I was saying go listen to Empire Burlesque. I also feel sad about the production of some of these songs sometimes, but like, this, it's actually laid out perfectly. The song after this is Emotionally Yours. Like, this is not a throwaway song on an album. Like, this leads into a great, great song. I mean, I'm so happy you chose this one. I haven't thought about this. I can't remember the last time I ever thought about this song, with the exception of, I think, Rob, I think you told both Matt and me this story once before on a Pod Dylan. I think when we did,
I put it on Twitter. I told it on
was
Twitter.
Was it on Twitter? Oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, I know this story. Okay. It wasn't on a previous episode. Yeah, this is a great song. It's just a good, short, straightforward song. I would also love to hear it live. Love the Farm Aid version. Big fan of Farm Aid. Yeah, and I love that Switzerland show. That was great. I mean, I can't believe First of all, Rob, that you picked this song. Second of all, Matt, that you had all of that information about it at your fingertips. And third of all, that I knew exactly what you were talking about. I mean, of all songs.
This one's
it's a
great tune. It's a
great
really
song.
great tune. You know, again, this is the kind of stuff Bob tosses away, essentially. You know, I mean, I think a lot of artists, they had this in their catalog. This would open a show or close a show ad infinitum, and this is something Bob can just do a couple times and be like, nah, or whatever. I don't
Yeah.
need
By the
this.
way, I need that
Whatever.
t-shirt now.
I'm stunned. I think it was somebody posted a picture of it on Twitter, and that inspired me to tell the story.
Oh, that's what
Because
it
I was
was.
like, wow, yeah, that t-shirt. I remember I had that shirt. Yeah,
Do you
it's
still
just
have it?
oh no, it's been lost to the
You were so
ages.
ashamed that you took it off right there in the parking lot and
I
threw it in the
did. I
garbage,
rended my
burned
garments. I really did.
said
I
to the
felt
couple, "I'm not going to put my faith in ungodly men.
yeah.
Leave it with someone else,
I should
please."
have said, you know what a drag it is to see you two. You know, I should have just said that. But
Yeah.
again, I'm not that clever. Okay, boys. Well, those are your eight songs. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I hope you had fun researching these and then bouncing off each other. So now it's time for the two surprise songs, and I'm going to drop it. And for one of them, I decided, being real goofy, I want to talk about 1990s "She's My Baby" from the Traveling Wilburys Volume 3, because we get to hear Bob Dylan sing about a woman sticking her tongue down his throat. I love this song. I
My
am.
God.
It is just. I love the video of Bob in his pork pie hat running around on the bike, being silly and being goofy. It's very funny to me that, you know, for people who don't know, how much the Volume 3 tapes were messed with. Well, I guess maybe that's a slightly pejorative phrase. Altered from the original recordings, because this song was originally entirely sung by Bob, and then George Harrison went in and they added all the Wilburys singing their own verses of it. There are other songs. Some people have called the Volume 3 sessions Bob Dylan and Friends, because he is so
Yeah.
heavy on those sessions. And then George Harrison and Jeff Lynne bring them back to England and are kind of like, we got to make a Wilburys record out of this, because it's really just kind of Bob Dylan and his backup band. And so that's why there's a lot more post production on that record than there was in the first one. And there's another musician playing on this song with doing the guitar solo, who's not one of the Wilburys. We can talk about whether that's sort of appropriate or not to have a non-Wilbury playing on this record. But I love this song. It's catchy, it's silly. It doesn't need a Beatle and the world's greatest rock lyricist to write these lyrics, but that's the fun of it. And so I've always loved the song. I've always wanted to get to it, you know, a whole episode, maybe not, but I've always wanted to talk about it. So, okay, Matt, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on "She's My Baby"?
Oh, I love it. It's so naughty, that I love it. So I'm naughty too. My favorite line in modern times is on Thunder on the Mountain, when he says, "I've got the pork chop, she's got the pie, she ain't no angel, and neither I smile, I laugh. It makes my day whenever I hear that." And the opening line of this one is right in there with, like, "Hey, I'm just gonna, you know, talk about sex and food and my girlfriend. You know, it's she's got a pudding in the oven and it's gonna be good." I mean, if you start a song like that, but I mean, there's nowhere to go but up. I mean, it's just you're in for a treat with that one. So I mean, yeah, this one's great. I know when they recorded these songs, that they would all sing the songs and have full lyrical coverage from all of the Wilburys, and then they would pick and choose who was going to get which stanza and which line on there. So they alternate. So I would love to hear the full Wilburys tapes to hear all of these, because I love Bob's renditions of all these. You know, the Wilbury twist is good, and "The Devil's Been Busy in Your Backyard" is such a great song too. "Seven Deadly Sins." But yeah, this one's good. You know, he mentions "No Time to Think" in this one, going back to one of your favorite albums, "Street Legal." But yeah, the best part of the song is when he's
And it just kind of music just kind of drops out, and he says she likes to stick her tongue right in my throat. I mean, you're not ready for it. I mean, it starts out, you're like, I should be ready for it, but you're not ready for it. And then he hits it, and it's just great. What else can you say? It's a classic.
It's got a quote from the 1988 film Working Girl, except they invert it because she's got a body for business and a head for sin, which is the reverse of the line from the movie. So I love the idea of like the Wilbury sitting around watching Working Girl. Like, did they go to a movie theater to watch that? I love all that stuff. It's so ridiculous. Bob is at his most kind of braying, where he's just like, she likes to put a tongue right down my throat. Like he's leaning into the Bob Dylan thing, but I just, it's so, again, it's so catchy. And you've got the chorus, which is very early Beatles, baby, my, like that is like, it's Harrison pulling out his old tricks. Again, it's the idea of these four guys, these massively talented artists producing such a piffle of a song is just, to me, is so perfect. You're just like, hey, these guys could write this quite literally in their sleep, and yet here it is. So again, I love the song. So Henry, She's My Baby.
I mean, it's a Bob Dylan song from 1990 that has a music video. Like, you get to not only listen to the Wilburys, but you get to look at them too. I mean, how many times have you watched the video for End of the Line, and then you're like, is there more Wilburys videos out there? Oh, there is. I mean, it's just what, and now, like, looking back, and looking at these guys, it's like, it's just so great to see them like this. And Petty hasn't been gone that long. It's really sad, going back to all my friends are gone. And obviously Wilburys 3, like you said, it's different than Wilburys 1. It's doesn't have Roy Orbison, which you kind of feel like they're trying to fill in that presence with just more of them. And like you said, more Bob, which I'm not complaining about. They got Jim Keltner with them. They bring him and a couple other musicians, but it's just a good rocker. It's great seeing. It's kind of like the Wilbury Twist. They're kind of just passing along the verses to each other. And by the way, they didn't just have some random guy on lead guitar. They actually gave him a Wilbury name. So Gary Moore got the name Ken Wilbury, and Jim Keltner got the name Buster Sidebury. So they actually gave them some names. So Bob, of course, is Boo Wilbury on this one. So yeah, it's a treat. It's a delight. I hadn't thought about this song in a decade, probably.
I'll go to my grave believing that there is a great story behind Down in the Groove, where Bob was really trying to go back to the 50s. And take those period songs and reimagine them, cover them. And I think this is one of those where, like, strip out the orneriness of some of the lyrics. This is a 1950s song. She's my baby. She's this, she's this, she can do this, she can do this, she's my baby. I mean, that's kind of a classic 50s
Yeah,
song.
this would
Then
be
they
like a
put their
great
own
Motown
spin.
song or something from the 50s. Yeah. It was a
And
stacked
they just
record.
like, again, kind of in the folk tradition, they're like, oh, let's do this 50s era song, and then let's just make it a little bit ornery in the way that we know how to do. And it's just perfect. I mean, you can't help but smile when you listen to this one.
I love it. I again, I'm a sucker for it. It's the idea that this played on MTV, the video for this is just, for people too young to remember MTV, did used to play music, and the idea that they would play this is just so hysterical to me.
It's
You think
amazing.
about that. This is the channel that now runs what, Ridiculousness, just 24/7. That's all they do. And like, there was a time where they were playing Wilbury's videos. It's just insane. And just again, seeing Bob just tootling around on his bike, and them crammed in the little car at the end, and Michael Palin comes running by. Like, it's just everything. It's just, I don't know. I understand why the Wilburys, they probably felt like, no, let's not do this again. It was a thing, and let's not, drag it out. But at the same time, like, boy, I wish
they should have toured. They should have.
I wish they could have just kept doing, kept going with it or something, or just another record. Come back to it a couple of years later. They were clearly having so much fun, and this thing again, just the I love Jim Keltner's insanely loud drumming on it. Again, and Bob just singing
the Professor Harold Hill hat.
Oh my
God.
Love it. Just love it so much. Just great song. So, okay. I'm glad we finally got to it. Getting in near the end, we finally got to it. Okay. So the last song that I wanted to talk about, we're going to kind of wind our way back to where we started, which is Self Portrait. And this time I'm talking about an outtake from Self Portrait, which is Tattle O'Day. Now, when I got this, when I bought another Self Portrait box set, and I listened to it, and I admit I was a little dubious, like, really, a whole bootleg release on Self Portrait, like, okay. But of course, like any other Dylan album, there's lots of great stuff that he'd left off. But I got to this, which some sources say he wrote, other sources say no, it's a folk song that he has amended, and it's existed for 100 years. It's not really quite sure. But when I got to this simple little song, which is a bunch of nonsense lyrics, I bide me a little dog. I bought a little bull about 4 inches high. The dog has legs that are 14 yards long. It's a nonsense song, but he brings a vocal commitment to this song that I find to be incredibly stirring and incredibly powerful. And I will die on this hill. I absolutely believe him leaving this off Self-Portrait deserves to be listed among his great sins of leaving songs off records, on the same league as Blind Willie McTell or Up to Me or Caribbean Wind or Red River Shore. Now, is this song as meaningful and as important as those songs? No, of course not. This is just a silly little ditty. But when I think about some of the crap that made its way onto Self-Portrait, and this he leaves off, is just, I'm like, what was he thinking? I find this song every time I listen to it, it's barely 2.5 minutes long. I actually get misty eyed. I'm so in love with the power of his performance of this song. And I feel like there is a direct line between this song and the remake of You Ain't Going Nowhere, which I talked about with Happy Trom a couple episodes ago, which everyone knows is one of my all-time favorite performances, because that has a bunch of nonsense words in it. But it's about the performance. And especially at the end, he says, I bide me a little hen, all speckled, gay, and fair. I sat her on an oyster shell. She hatched me out of hair. The hare had sprang a handsome horse, full 15 hands high. And him that tells a bigger tale would have to tell a lie. Sing Tattle O'Day. That line about him that tells a bigger tale would have to tell a lie. I find that just incredibly profound. To me, that is, it's, this song is about the power of performance, the power of music to try and convey something to someone with words and music. And this song, again, it's all full of nonsense. He's talking about lambs and geese and sheep that yielded feathers. I mean, it's all just sort of gibberish, but that line about having to tell a lie is sort of like saying, I've entertained you. I've told you this great song. I've sang you this great song. And for someone else that tries to sing something better, that's a lie, because nobody's going to do it better than what I'm just doing right now. No exaggeration, this is one of my favorite things the man has ever done. And the fact that this didn't make it onto a Self-Portrait, which was a double record. There was room for it, but no, he had to do two Albertas and a boxer. But I'm glad it exists. I'm glad it exists, and I'm glad I finally got to hear it. And it was something I've talked about wanting to do a whole episode on it, and I just never got around to it. Because again, there's not a lot to say about it. It's all performance to me. It's all performance. And I put it on again when I was out walking my dog today. I listened to it 5-6 times right in a row, and it works for me every time. I just think it's beautiful, and that he can put something together like this so seemingly meaningless and to me delivers such an emotional punch to me. This is why I love this guy. This is why I spent thousands of hours of my life doing a podcast about him, because he can transform something so silly as this into like gold. So I'm trying to talk as long as I can, so you guys have some time to think about what you think about this song. But yeah, this is, I was never going to end this show without at least talking about Title Low Day. So
wow,
that is Title Low Day.
Yeah. I mean, I would have lost every penny I had if I had put money on that this would be the song you would pick to end things with. I mean, what a surprise. You know, I think when we talk a lot, with both of you and just with you, Rob, like, I think the sort of general way things go is you talk about the lyrics and their meaning, and I have something, thoughts or ideas or information about music stuff. And I think with this one, this is one of those ones that reminds you that there is nothing like Bob Dylan and a guitar. The power that this man has, the command that he has over playing a song and delivering a song, is unmatched and unrivaled. And, you know, this song has that feeling, like Good As I've Been to You, World Gone Wrong, Bob Dylan, his self-titled, like the, you know, maybe he wrote it, maybe he didn't, probably it was very much informed by other folk music, but there is something so crisp and clear, and he sings it very confidently. Like, you know, maybe he had the lyrics in front of him, but the whatever message he's trying to get off, and maybe it's just nonsense lyrics, even that is delivered and presented so confidently. And yeah, I remember also when Another Self-Portrait came out, I think at the time there was like a lot of buzz that was when the More Blood, More Tracks was finally going to come out, I think, if I have the timeline right. And then this one dropped, and I was like, oh, okay, is that right? Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, another side, all right. But what a gold mine of stuff in there. And like you said, if the album had just been a little tinkered with in terms of song choice, I mean, what a masterpiece that would have been praised as, perhaps. I mean, I already like it, as we've all established that we like that Self-Portrait, but yeah, this is real gem on it. And Rob, I feel bad speaking actually after you so beautifully put it in the context of your whole experience with Bob Dylan. That was really quite moving what you said. And I can really relate to that.
Thank you. I've had time to think about this song. You know, it's just, he's able to, the fact that he is able to just knock me on my ass in a way that I don't, I mean, it's almost, it's weird. It's like, he's done it so many times, you come to expect it, which isn't fair, right? Because you're like, keep being brilliant. Well, hasn't he been brilliant enough? Like, okay. But then, for something like this, you know, like this, again, this nonsense song. And, you know, we never know, but the idea that he would record this with Bob Johnston and nobody leaned on him to say, come on, this has got to make it. We got to put this on here. This is so good. I just, you know, so I just can't believe it. But yeah, and so I just love it. So, all right, so Matt, Title Low Day.
Well, Henry, don't feel bad for following Rob. Because unlike you, I knew this would be one of Rob's two songs.
Really?
Because I don't remember what episode it was. I've listened to all of your episodes. I remember you singing the praises of this song on some random other song, and I don't agree, and I just knew, I'm like, he's gonna have one of these two songs that I don't like.
And
if I had to rank my least favorite Dylan songs, this would be my second least favorite of everything.
Whoa! Oh,
now, this is pull the George Costanza. This is me. This isn't you. I mean, I know this is, I'm the guy that likes the 80s songs. I'll die on the Union Sundown Hill. So, you know, this is different strokes for different folks. I will 100% agree with you. The performance is amazing. The sound of it is great. If when people say I'd listen to Bob Dylan sing the phone book, to me, this is what they're talking. He can sing the cover off the ball, no problem. I me personally, I can't get over the lyrics. And I know this, I think, is something me personally, the songs where he intentionally uses incorrect grammar, it just hangs me up. So,
like, you know, Bob, you know what the correct one is.
Yeah. The light I've never knowed. I love Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, but that gets me every time.
Really?
Most likely you go your way and I go mine. Time will tell who has fallen. You know, time will tell
yeah,
who has
fallen.
I understand
yeah.
it rhymes, but it
yeah.
gets me every time. And of course it's in the Rough and Rowdy there. And this is full of phrases and words. And I love the old timey stuff, but there's just something about it that doesn't seem natural to me. And it hangs me up and it interferes with my ability to enjoy the performance. But I don't want to begrudge you because, you know, one of my favorite songs is, To Fall in Love with You. And that's got garbled nonsense lyrics, you know, so I totally get where you're coming from. That's one of my favorite performances of his, and he's not singing any real lyrics. So I understand where you're coming from, but, for me, this is not one of my favorites.
I feel terrible, I admire your I admire your willingness to bring the show down at its very end. I really appreciate that, Matt.
Thank you, Rob, because you guys always beat up on me when I share the songs I don't like. Thank you, Rob.
You had a very nice, very nice 2-hour conversation. Yours will be the last opinion given on any song, and then you decide to you just piss all over the show. I really appreciate the guts it took to do that, Matt. This is a safe space, and I appreciate you're willing to do it. I hear you. I totally hear you. I can think to some people's ears, this is just nonsense. Why am I listening to this? Right. And maybe if the performance was different, I would feel the same. You know, I'd just be like, ah, this is just kind of nonsense. And the performance is mad. And maybe there's another take of it that I'd go, eh. But there's just something. As you say, Henry, he just sounds confident. He sounds like he's so happy singing this song. So again, I'm not going to go on and on about it. I've already said my piece. I just, this is why this guy just constantly amazes me. And that even when I'm expecting amazing stuff, he squirrels it away in this little corner somewhere on a record that, you know, has a lot of crap on it. And we all know that the sessions were marvelous. And they're like, wow, there's all this other great stuff. And what is this? What is this? And so, it was something I've always wanted to get to. So despite Matt's opinion on it, I'm glad I brought it up. So thank you. And I appreciate you both being willing to be surprised by it. And you know, geez, I didn't realize I was that transparent, Matt, that you were able to guess that I was going to talk about it, even though I did not reveal it to you. So
I just knew it. I'm like, I know there's a song he likes that I don't have, and you and I are like 99% in sync. And I'm like, I just know he's going to pick one that it's not my favorite.
Okay. Fair enough.
Makes it interesting.
Fair enough. Well, boys, thank you for doing this. I appreciate your being game for this different approach that we took, having sort of instant opinions on some songs. That's not the way the show goes. We always have time to think about it, but I very much appreciate it. And, you know, when I decided to end the show, I always, you guys coming on together ever since we paired up for the Band in the Hand, you guys have been a great combo, and you've been great individually and then a great combo. And so it was always going to be something I wanted to do. So I really appreciate you coming back. I appreciate all the friendship you've shown me both in and out of the show and all the great episodes that you've done with me. And I appreciate you coming back one last time.
Well, it's been an honor. I'm very fortunate to be on the podcast as many times as I have. I've enjoyed every episode that I've listened to. The ones that I participated in, I've looked forward to it weeks prior. I just
love to dig into the songs. It's helped me explore different aspects and avenues of the songs that I hadn't noticed before. And I bring that to my listening experience, and I get more out of each song. And it's incredible to me when I think of how much time I put into preparation for the songs I'm doing. And you do this each and every week. And you've shared that effort with everybody. You've opened new ways of looking at songs to people that they never considered, never would have considered. You've made an incredible dent in the Dylan canon, a wonderful contribution when nobody else was. You were a pioneer in the Bob Dylan podcast community. It's flourishing now. So I want to congratulate you on an incredible run. Thank you for all the time and effort and the entrepreneurship. And congratulate you on whatever comes next. I'm sure it's going to be as equally wonderful as Pod Dylan.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've gone on record multiple times, both here and on Twitter, saying that, and with other people that, I had all these feelings and thoughts inside of me about Bob Dylan, and I, except for like one friend here and there, I didn't have anyone to share it with. And I wrote you a note in 2019 as a fan of this show and as a fan of your other shows and said, "Hey, I'm going to see Bob Dylan if you ever want to have someone on to talk about him live." And you had me on. And then minutes before you said, "Wait, so you were at the DC show with me?" And I was like, "No, I saw him in Chicago." And you're like, "Oh, okay. Well, we'll still talk." So anyway, even with the misunderstanding, you still had me on, and you really gave me a voice and an outlet to express my thoughts and feelings about Bob Dylan. And through that, I'm so appreciative. Like, it's you don't make new friends really when you're a grown up. It just kind of stops happening. You keep your people and others fall by the wayside. And I, because of you, Rob, I've have this whole group of people now that are my friends, including Matt. You were like Yenta, you were an incredible matchmaker. I mean, we got to rock out to Bob Dylan 5 nights in a row together before and after. And that's because of you. And I can't thank you enough. Like I said, you're my Sunday morning comfort while I'm making breakfast for my kids or cleaning up the house. I'm learning something new or listening to myself. And I can't thank you enough for everything you've given to us.
Yeah, literally, Rob, your podcast has created friendships in the real world. I mean, that's a wonderful contribution to society and to the Dylan community. So I can't thank you enough.
All right, thank you, thank you both, boys. We're gonna stop this now. Again, thank you. This again, I would not have imagined ending the show sort of any other way. So thank you all for doing this. Thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find this show on Twitter and Blue Sky still. And if you want to access the first 100 episodes, you can subscribe to the show on fmpods.com. Other than that, all the rest of the shows will remain on the network and all the various podcast platforms. So, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is the penultimate episode, which means next week will be our final show where we're going to talk about one last song. We'll see you then. Bye.
The Harriet sprang a handsome horse, full 15 hands high.